because that's the name. We registered domain.com. That's what we're trying to fill out here. These have nothing on the front. A second shortcut is, if it's blank, it copies the same name as the line above it. These are all just typing shortcuts to cut down on making errors. If you type this name 10 times, you're a lot more likely to screw it up once than if you type it once and just let it fill in. Obviously, what we would do here is put our real IP address in here, which is 199.45.143.200, right? That's the actual IP address of this iPad.
Is this in the iPad manual?
All this is in the iPad manual, and in great detail in that book, DNS and Bind, they walk you through all of it. But yes, this is also all in the iPad manual. Somebody even knows the page number. Cool. See, it's really in there. Somebody knew, could find enough of it to give a page number. And great. No, I'm thrilled. Don't get me wrong. We would change this NS to lab.esoft.com because that's our name server. Now you'll notice the trailing dots. Somebody asked me about this at the break, and here's the time for this to come up. Because of all these shortcuts, especially the one we're about to see, this is ns.domain.com. If I just put ns with no trailing period, it will add the name that's going above it. So since this was saying domain.com, this becomes ns.domain.com. If I don't want that, I have to put a trailing period here. So if I said ns dot, it would not add the stuff from above. And www.domain.com. So let's get rid of ns.domain.com. We don't want that because we're not a name server here. But we are. www.domain.com will be the same address, 199.45.143.200. Why? Because people always use www.domain.com. They expect that to work. So we've given that name. Our server's on the same machine, so we give it the same address. Yes? Well, at this point, we don't have a secondary address, so we left it out. Where we would put it is right here. In NS, the ns1.esoft.com.
You have to manually put the secondary.
Yes. All this is a template that gives you the roughed in, and then as you fill it out with anything significant, you're going to have to add the pieces in yourself. And you just type these records in when you need them. More domain names, you mean? Now, this is only for one name.
Right.
For another name, you go back to the boot file, put in another primary, and you have another separate zone file for that name. So a single zone file is only for one name. And all subnames. In other words, that had in it. See, domain.com, that domain is in this file. If I add primary on Bozo, bozo.com. And it would just say something like lab.nam or something. And then this file would be another file of this form with the information for these names in it. Yes? No, and we're going to show you that in a moment. Let us decide, why don't you take this line out and put in a secondary. Whoops, secondary. I'm the one with the thumb here, Chris. Oh, okay. I got it.
Now, this would be if I were to call you and you would be the secondary.
Right. You called me and you said, would you be secondary? And I'm going to be secondary to esoft.com. And now I'm going to put, instead of the file right away, I'm going to say 199.45.143.14. That's where that file is. And then I space over and put esoft.nam that says, I want you to download the zone from this guy and write it on my disk into this file.
This is what you have to call your secondary.
This is what's not been done. Was it you that, for the secondary he's talked to, and in your case it's not been done because you never told him you wanted it done, but in both cases this is what's missing.
Or if you act as somebody else's secondary.
And if you act as someone's I'm sorry, what? If you act as someone's secondary, this is all you have to do on your machine.
You have a secondary that's not showing up. You have to tell them to do that.
That they have to do this on their machine.
But you had nothing else in yours.
Nothing else in yours. And what we're going to show now is you see that we have brought this up and said we're secondary to this. Now, save the file.
I would assume that if you call .name, you shouldn't have another domain or anything in that same file name.
Well, you obviously, they're disk files. You have to make sure they have different names. Exactly. Now, go back up to iPad and start the iPad. Now, because it's secondary, it's now secondary. We told it to be secondary. And it's going to wake up here, and I think it's about 2 minutes after boot that it checks the first time. And it will say, I'm supposed to be secondary, and I don't have such a file on my disk. And it will go contact that IP address, 129.45.143.14, and it will transfer the file. You'll see a little flick here in a couple of minutes where it says DNS exfer. And that means I went and got it. And after that flick happens, if we go look in that disk directory, the file esoft.nam will have appeared. It's not there now. It'll have appeared, and when we look at it, it will have the information in it from the primary server. And at that moment, this server will know what that server knows and will be authoritative. And that's what secondary is all about. So I want to demonstrate it to you by actually showing it happen. I think it takes 2 minutes. Do you remember what time it was? Sometimes it happens so fast that you don't see the flick when it's on a local network like this. But well, just do a directory on DNS. That'll tell us if it's gotten here yet. It's not here yet. You see, there's our domain name we're making, domain reverse, which we haven't done yet, boot name, which is our original starting point for this whole tree of where all the zone files are, and root cache, and there's no esoft nam here yet. Okay, so clear that. Okay, it hasn't happened yet. I think it'll happen in about another minute. And what happens is it'll pull it, it'll see it doesn't have it, and it'll get the file. Okay, yes. You can do this while the system's up. If you have this directory somewhere, you can edit the files across a LAN. I don't have it set up that way here now. It's on the iPad's local disk, and I don't have any way to edit that file. I could take it off, you know, edit it somewhere else and FTP it back. I've got to be able to change the file.
All right, so you can edit it.
And if you change the file while the iPad is running, you can do the domain reload command. And that's the same as, that says go back and do all this again and reload yourself.
Yeah.
And that command, if you make a mistake, domain reload will give you an error and won't put the new data in. It'll leave it alone. So you're safe if you make a mistake, a syntax error or something. It'll give you the error and it won't change it. So that's a safe thing to do remotely as far as that goes, but to do it remotely, you've got to have a way to get to where those files are. And the normal way you would do them is put them on a server that you could get to from somewhere else and tell the iPad that's where they were. Is it there now? Yes. See, the file esoft.nam has appeared. Now if you do an NS lookup on esoft.com, this is a non-recursive request, and he's now authoritative. So this server just became a secondary authoritative server for esoft.com. Are there any questions about that process? And then we probably need to take a break here.
Can we do that process one more time, just to not
Sure, I'll do it. I'll do it for another one, and we'll do it right after the break. The trick there, remember, go back to the. You can do a display on DNS/boot.nam here. This line right here was added to the boot file, the one pointed to by your iPad control domains, boot equals. This line was added. It said, I am to be secondary on the domain esoft.com, and the actual data file, the primary file, resides on the machine with this IP address. And when you port it to my machine, I want you to save it on disk with this file name. Yes?
I've got all this is on my network file server.
Yes.
Can I edit that file, boot name file?
Absolutely.
My terminal, how long will it actually be before the iPad recognizes?
Well, you edit it. It's not once the iPad will only look at that file when you tell it to. When it starts up, it sucks it in. And it never goes back to it again unless you do a domain reload command. And a domain reload says, basically the way you would do it is you'd edit these files to the way you liked them, and then you'd type domain reload. Here's an example. Domain reload, DNS boot file reloaded, authority updated. Question came up, what's domain exfer? That's a diagnostic command. When you do these secondaries, sometimes you'll get errors. Look at the iPad log file. Can you display iPad.log? And go down to the end. And you will see DNS server, zone transfer of esoft.com successful. That means it transferred a new primary zone. Now, if I were to go over to the machine and edit it and put a new serial number in it, and do a domain reload, it would transfer it again.
Now this will do all of the domain files?
Everything. Because they're all in that one zone transfer file. So let's go and do the domain transfer. The question was, what to do a domain exfer of esoft.com from 199.45.143.14. You can space back to that command. This says, I want you to transfer, do a domain transfer, the same thing you would do if you were a secondary server, for this name from this server. It's diagnostic. It doesn't put it in the database. It just goes and does the transfer and puts it on your screen to look at. So go, now we can go back. And this is what got transferred. It connected to the server, and it received the zone esoft.com from 143.14. Origin.com is the piece that little at sign, dollar origin, changes what that means. So esoft.com dot is what the name is going to be done. These will not actually copying the text file. You remember I told you it compiles it? Now it's sending you the binary thing and decompiling the binary into something that would be a text file that would work. So it's not going to have your comments in it, and it's not going to look quite the way you did it. It's got a little algorithm of origins and things that it always does. But it says esoft.com, there's the SOA record, the two NS records, the two MX records, and the A record. Now, jpm.esoft.com has this address. Othernet.esoft.com has this address. Class.esoft, I think that's your question, right? How all the subs, that's how you define the subs. So all of these little names, here's lab1.esoft.com, and you walk them down, mindwire.esoft.com, class.esoft.com, and scroll that down a little bit, and you can see that these are all the names that have been given, and test RMI is an MX record for test we put in here. We gave testrmi.esoft.com, we'll send it to potofgoldrmi.com.esoft.com. So basically, you can see here how this all works, and here's ftp.esoft.com is a CNAME to esoft.com. And what you're seeing is a dump of the entire thing that came out of that zone transfer file in text, compiled down to binary, then re-decompiled back to text in a way that on this one, when it loads that text, it'll get the same answer. And this is what's actually transferred when you do a domain transfer. And the domain exfer is just a diagnostic command for you to do that. And it lets, it's kind of a cute thing, and most systems don't have that. I put it in the iPad when I was working on secondaries because it seemed like a tool I really wanted, and so I left it in for you guys to play with. It's really fun. Yes?
You had a separate file for your reverse agent.
That is correct, because it's a different zone of authority. It's a different domain name. We go back to that real quick. Go back to boot NAM. We would fill this in with 143.145.199, because that's the first three parts of our address backwards. And this is the domain name. And it's just the same as domain.com or anything. It's a forward name. It happens to be made out of numbers, but it's a name. Because it's a name, it has a separate zone file. That's one of the other reasons it's easy to forget your reverse, because it lives in a different domain, and if you don't edit it, you can change this one and forget to go change this one.
Is there any order that you put those files in if you're adding primary?
Order is absolutely not important. The question was, in a boot file, as you're putting in primaries and secondaries, does the order matter? Not at all. It doesn't matter what order you do any of those in. And within your file, it doesn't matter. The only part of the order that matters in a zone file is there's only one SOA record in a zone file, and it has to be first, non-comment. After that, the order of everything else does not matter either. Let's take a quick 15-minute break here. You're already leaking it out the side of your head by now, but... Well, it could be a 5-day class pretty easy, but it gets tough to get that much time. But we'll get it done. I think by the end of tomorrow, you'll be surprised after you sleep on this tonight, come back, and we refresh it tomorrow, how much really does stick. Okay, now, somebody wanted us to go over the secondary thing again before we proceeded, right? Wanted to see it done again?
Just how you set up the main, just to go through it all again.
Okay. We start with the boot file, which is whatever file you name the boot equals domain command in your iPad control file at. It has this format. Every time you want to add a domain, you're going to be adding a line here. One and only one line for each domain goes in the boot file. That line is either to say that your primary, meaning the actual text file, is on this machine, or that your secondary, meaning the zone file, is on another machine, and you're supposed to go get it and copy it here.
Can that address name be a human name?
No, this name must be an IP number.
Okay. What happens if you were spoofing and kind of trying to make yourself primary and secondary?
You would not do it by making yourself primary and secondary. You would do that by giving two IP addresses to your iPad, and you would only be primary, because you only have one database. Primary and secondary is not about responding to requests. It's about servers sharing the database. Yes? I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Can we do set up a secondary for a site not located here?
Can we? I think the question, let me state it and you tell me if I'm still not sure I'm getting the question exactly right. Are you saying, could we set up a secondary here for a system that was somewhere else?
Right.
Absolutely. The trick to remember about the internet, it's a big land. There is nowhere else. Everything's here. It's no different being on the ends of this table and being here in Venezuela. It's a LAN, everything's here. There is no here and there on the internet. It's a I'm making that a little bit of a joke, but it's a very important concept to realize. There is no here and there. This is why people have such security paranoia. Because when you plug into the internet, they plugged into you. And very literally, there is no here and there is no there. And so if you can do it across the room, you can do it around the globe, and what you do to do it is no different. I just changed this IP address to the IP address of a machine that has a primary authoritative file for some domain name and say secondary, and I am. And it doesn't matter where they are or who they are. There's no distance in this. You got to get over the fact that putting things far apart changes them. If you see it happen across this table, or you see it happen as in this case between one here and one that's in the office over there, you just saw it happen between here and the Czech Republic. It's no different.
A little faster.
It could be a little faster. It could be a little slower. Who knows? It sometimes is faster to go around the world than across the street, depending on the lines that are involved. It's all a matter of bandwidth and where it really exists. The trick is that the distance thing has nothing to do with anything. It's just a huge LAN. So did you want us to do that with one and see how it happens? Let's go back to yours, so we won't really be getting anybody. Add another line down here that says secondary, and yours is
CUSCOMP.com.
And do you know the IP address of your machine?
Yes, 206.104.29.3.
And that's the one that has the primary database on it, right? And just CUS.NAM. Okay, now save that file and boot the iPad. In 2 minutes, we will be the secondary authoritative domain server for your system. That doesn't mean anything because nobody in the world knows we are.
Right.
Why do they not know we are?
Because the internet
doesn't know we are. Which for him is really, we're kind of on board here because the ones that knows aren't. So we're kind of balancing this out. The ones that are, they don't know. But yes, that's exactly what has to happen. Yes.
Now, if you wanted to add a secondary service and the whole world to know about it,
You would go to whoever it is who sends in the registration,
yeah.
In this case him, and he would send in a domain update email request to the hostmaster at Internic or DomRig or hostmaster. I think updates go to hostmaster. Hostmaster at internic.net, and he would fill out the form again and say it's an update, and he would add me as a name server at the bottom. 3 to 4 days later, he'd get email saying it's done, and it's done.
On the other hand, if someone wants to hack into your system, they can use this to get, maybe not to hack into it, but to get a fair amount of information about it.
Well, you just saw what we did with the domain transfer.
Yeah.
And I'll show you that we can do that places you wouldn't imagine we could. There are ways, however, with router filtering in the iPad to prevent that from happening. You can say that you will not let transfers happen except to those systems that you want to let it happen to. But as that's the whole point about the internet that you really have to keep in mind for security, and we're going to have some security discussions toward the end of tomorrow about spoofing and some other things. Biggest part of security is really understanding the real risks, because as long as it's a boogeyman, you can sit alone not knowing and get the fear level pretty high because you know you don't know. You know you're supposed to be scared. You don't know what you're supposed to be scared of or how scared you're supposed to be, so you just get as scared as you can get and don't know what about. And that can get pretty bad. And the general reaction to that is just let's build an intranet instead of an internet and not even hook up to that damn thing. That's usually where it ends up. That's kind of ironic because 80% of all security problems happen from inside the company anyway, and an intranet doesn't do anything about that. But bottom line is that there are some real security issues. They really aren't too difficult to deal with if you understand what they are. The bulk of security issues, 85 to 90% of the security issues, have nothing to do with the internet itself, and they're not spoofing, and all these complex things you hear. They're attacks on an operating system that's connected. Somebody finds a hole in an operating system that's connected and busts in. A Unix system, an NT system, they find a way just to hack the system. That's 80-90% of the real security issues on the internet. And they don't have, if you're looking in TCP IP to fix those, you kind of, you can, but it's difficult. It's much better generally to go have somebody who's expert on your operating system go close all the doors.
Has anybody hacked through the iPad yet?
You cannot hack through the iPad because there's nothing there to hack. Bottom line is that to hack an operating system, you generally have to get to an entryway like remote login. There's no remote login on the iPad. You can't rlogin, which is one of the big entry points into a Unix system. The only thing you could conceivably hack would be something like an FTP site by getting a password that gives you more access than you're supposed to get. But no, there's not. There's just nothing there to hack. But even better is it doesn't work the way anything else works, so all the things they know to do aren't going to get them anywhere. That, I call that the master lock theory of security. I'll get into that more tomorrow. Don't know if you've ever seen master lock ads on TV. They shoot it with a 45 and prove it won't open the lock. It's absolutely true. If you ever go to locksmith school, the first lock they train you on picking is a master lock because you can pick it faster than you can use the key on it. But master locks generally keep people out because people don't try to pick them. Because they just don't know that. And so security is a very interesting field that I could do several days on all by itself, but there's a half a dozen key security rules that'll get you 85, 90% of your security in a few simple moves. It's like everything else. Once you 80% is easy, 85% is about that hard again, 87% about that hard again. By the time you're to 90%, you're unbelievably difficult to get to 91, and the closer you want to get to 100, it's just like the speed of light. You can't ever quite get there. You can start to get asymptotically approach it. But the big thing you want to worry about in security is you got to remember most crooks are dumb or they wouldn't be crooks.
iPad and then hack through on my NT machine.
Bottom line is when you're using the iPad as a router and they get to your NT machine, it's exposed. If you have a Unix box and you come through the iPad to it, it's exposed. They can hack the system that they get to. So you can do some tricks, which we'll go into as far as filtering, to build firewalls to prevent them from getting to things in more than certain ways that you want them to. Yeah, you can do Bastion, you can do Partway, you can do a lot of different things. And that's part of what we'll go through tomorrow on security. Have I stalled for 2 minutes yet?
Yes.
We now have cuscomp.nam. And now, if you do an NS lookup to cuscomp.nam, or cut.com, we are now authoritative for it. That's how a secondary authoritative server works. So it's pretty easy. That's why your provider's willing to be it. He just has to put one of these lines in every time you tell him you have a new name. He edits his boot file, puts that line in, and says, thank you very much. And then you edit your file, and he doesn't ever have to deal with it again. As long as you change the serial number, yes. That's the mostest, importantest part of that file to change. Yes.
So say if I've got three clients, they have their own domain names, and I'm hosting for them.
Yes.
So each three clients I pick up, I need to add a line in my boot.nam.
Boot.nam. Let me walk you all the way through that. The question was, so if I've got three domain names I'm hosting for clients on my iPad. Every time I get a new name, I would go to boot.nam and add most likely a new primary domain name because I'm going to actually have the file for them. And I would make a new primary for domain2.com, and that would be domain2.nam. And I make primary for domain3.com, and that would be domain3.nam. You don't do that here. Someone else does it on another machine. The point of a secondary is to have this on two separate machines, so if one of them's down, the other one can answer the request. That's why the whole concept of primary and secondary. So if you're primary, you'll put your data here. Generally, your provider, the guy who you get your lease line, will agree to be secondary for you. And what you do is every time you add one of these names, you call them on the phone, you send them email and say, would you put one of these lines in yours? And that's all he has to do. As you saw, we put that line in, wait 2 minutes, and we're done. Because the file work's being done by you on your machine, by being secondary on his machine, it just sucks across what you do. And he doesn't ever have to worry about it after he's put that line in. So being secondary is very easy. You just have to, when you add domain 2, you have to tell him to add secondary domain 2, your IP number, in his file, which he can do real quick and go away. And then it's done. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Any other questions on generally how this is structured?
Just the reverse domain thing.
Okay, let's look at the reverse. We haven't really gone into detail on that. We're going to open that up. Our reverse is 143.45.199.inadder.arpa. And we're going to say that that's domain.rev. We're going to say that's the reverse of our... Same as anything else, we have a reverse domain. We have an SOA record. We have a name server record. But instead of the normal A and MX records, what we have in the reverse domain are PTR records. So,
which
simply say we'd put in 200. That's 199.45.143 that came down here, .200. Then we would put in here lab.esoft.com. And put a period at the end of it. Always need periods at the end of names out here, or you'll get extra added parts that you didn't know were there. You'll see them in your NS lookup, but when you see them, it means go back and put the period on here. Absolutely. If let's say we have 201 is a dial-up line when we get into our routing exercises tomorrow, and let's just call that sl1.lab.esoft.com. That's what we'll call it, let's say. Remember, everything before here, you just make it up. It's whatever you want it to be to mean something to you.
That SL1 would also have to be in the main file.
Then we'd have to put a forward in the main file, and it would say sl1lab.esoft.com A 199.45.143.201. So they go back and forth and match. Yes.
So then whoever uses that flip connection, that's who they would look like?
To the outside world, this would be their domain name while they were logged on. Their username is local to you for their logon. It's in their email. But while they're logged on, you're giving them dynamic IP addresses. That IP address that they called that they didn't know what it was till they got it would have this name. And if while they were dialed on, you went out there and did a ping on sl1lab.esoft.com, you'd ping their computer. If they brought up a web server while they were dialed in, you could do http://sl1.lab.esoft.com from anywhere in the world and go right to their web server while they're dialed in. They're on the internet.
Now,
the problem is by being dynamic, they never know what this is going to be, so they can't really go do it. But it works if while they're on, that's all active.
Does that create a security problem if someone that I'm giving access to comes in one of my flip connections starts, trying to do something that they should be doing somewhere?
Doesn't create any new security problem. I mean, obviously, you've given them access to the internet, they can go out and start poking and hacking somewhere.
Well, I mean, so like, say that the administrator of another system comes back and says, hey, this IP address belongs to you.
Oh, okay. What you're saying is, what happens if you get a phone call or a piece of email from some system administrator that says, on 8 o'clock on the evening of October 15th, sl1labesoft.com was trying to hack my system. What you would do is go back to your logs and see who was logged in at that time on that line. Yeah, who was that was logged in at that time on that line? And you'd have to do that correlation because this name means whoever's on only while they're there in a dial-up setting. Does that answer that? Okay.
What about one of our users on the
Same thing. You reverse every user on the Ethernet has his own IP address, and you'd put the reverse in here. But those are permanent.
Yeah. But instead of SL1, you just put in.
Apparently I'm not connecting with this. You put in anything you want, and it has whatever meaning you want it to have to you for you. So you could put, if it's Joe's computer, you could make it joe.esoft.com. If it's Joe's computer in the lab, you could make it joe.lab.esoft.com. If you wanted to, you could make it x.y.esoft.com. As long as it's different, it's okay. It gets a little cryptic. Because these are for humans, we try to make them mean something to us.
And as long as you have a forward lookup on that thing also.
Yes. You need for everything to work the way you want it to in the Internet. And this is the key piece. For everything to work the way you want it to at all times, you need both a forward and a reverse for every name in your that you actually use.
What about reverse for a
CNAME? A CNAME is not reversed because a CNAME simply is an alias for the other name, and if the other name is reversed, you're okay.
We don't need to do any reverse files for domain names.
The answer on that, the question is, and I'm going to make an assumption. Let me see if my assumption is correct. When you say we don't need to do any reverse for domain names, everything's a domain name. What you mean is for email-only domain names, correct? Domain names you put up for people who are only do not have A records, they don't connect to machines, they're just for sending and receiving email. All they'll have is an MX record. For those names, no, you do not need to reverse them because you did not connect that name to a piece of hardware. It's when you connect a name to a piece of hardware, you need to go forward and reverse.
What if it was a web server?
If it's a web server, it should be reversed. It's a piece of hardware. If you have an A record in the forward, you need a reverse. Now, if that address is reversed with a different name, you do not need to reverse it with more than one name, and in fact, you should not. Yes? No.
Okay.
That's the reverses only have to reverse to one name. It's frequent that a machine will have several names. A single machine might have a half a dozen domain names that all point to it. Only reverse it for one of those names. Doesn't matter which one. The point is, if I do a reverse and get a name, and then I do a forward on that name, do I get the same address? If I do, then it's okay.
Can I wildcard reverse?
No. The question is, can I wildcard reverse? And the answer is no. Because that makes several addresses have the same name. And that's not allowed.
So you're saying in our
several names can have the same address, but an address can't have several names.
Primary. The boot.name, where we have several primaries. You're saying each of those needs to have, only one of those needs to have a reverse name?
Right. The key is to remember that reversing is about the IP address, not about the name. And what you need is a reverse to a single name for every IP address that you use in any way forward. So anything that goes forward to an IP address, make a list. All the IP addresses you have that anything goes forward to, you have to make them go to reverse to at least one of the names that goes forward to them, or actually to only one.
So it can be looked up.
So it can be looked up. What you're trying to do is say when the receiving system gets an IP number, it will do a reverse lookup, get a name, and then do a forward lookup on that name and expect to see the same IP number come back.
It doesn't
care what the name is. It just wants to reverse it and then go forward with the name and get the same number back.
Okay, so all it's doing is taking an IP address it gets.
And saying, do a reverse to give me a name for it. And it'll put that name in its log quite often. And then when it gets that name, it will then do a forward lookup on that name and get an A record and say, does that IP match the same one I started to go backwards? And if it doesn't walk that and get the same IP number back, that's when it says, eh-eh, or as the Mad TV lady says, uh-uh, and you're out of there. And that's what the whole point of reversing is all about. So it doesn't matter which of the, if you have several names, it doesn't matter which of the names you reverse to. just has to be one that when you reverse to one, that when you go forward, gives you the same number back. Well, basically, that's DNS. And that's DNS with a little more of the error detection in it than I'd expected. We had some good examples here to show some of the problems. The thing to understand is far more often than you at first imagine, a problem is caused by bad DNS entries. It looks like something else is wrong. Email can't get through. All my emails being bounced. People come to my website and sometimes they get there and sometimes it won't connect. People are FTPing out to all these other sites and there's this one site they can't get to. It just hangs up on them. Something's wrong. What's wrong? Or three machines on my LAN. I can FTP to this site from two of them and the third one I can't. And you check it out, you've got a reverse address for two of them and you don't have one for the third. Those are the kinds of problems that are all appear to be hardware related. But in point of fact, at their core, they're DNS issues. Now, the last DNS issue is registration. This is the one that causes the most emotional disorientation the first few times you do it. Because you're dealing with an agency, the big agency far away, who's going to see you being a rookie, probably slap your hand and take your internet away from you. It's not so. They're the DMV of the internet. All their job is to keep the record straight. They don't care if you stole a car. If you can give them good documentation, they'll give you a license plate. They've got procedures, though. And their procedures are real important to them. And thus they become important to you. It's real important that you do it right, not because they're going to be mad at you. They'll just keep sending it back and saying, fill out the form again. That's all they'll do. And it's not personal. They won't even tell you what's wrong with it. They'll just go, uh-uh. And do it again. And the hard part's to find out even where is the form. What's it look like? Who would I send it to? Well, I'm going to give you the secret, and there's one secret. FTP to rs.internic.net. Write this down, rs.internic.net. That is ultimately the source of all the forms. And if you do a CD to templates, templates is what they call forms. They're electronic forms. They call them templates. Now do a directory. And this is a list of all the forms that you could have to fill out and send to the internet. For those of you with spare time, download them all, read them all. I did. Everybody probably should. It makes you feel better. There's not that many you really ever need to deal with. Domain template.txt. This, go ahead and get it. We've now downloaded the form. That's the form we use to apply for a domain name. In adder template.txt, if we have our own IP address, this is a template we would use. Generally, your IP address is registered to the guy one notch up. Your class C is registered to him, and he passes it to you with a route. So he will be the one who sends this template in. So you will talk to your provider and give him the address of your primary reverse server, and he'll do something at his end to point to it. It's done one of two ways. They may become secondary. You're primary, but the internet doesn't point to you, but all the things it points to become secondary to you. That still gives you control. You edit the file, it goes over there, and it works. Some providers like to do it that way. others will go ahead and put an entry in their file that they're authoritative, and they've delegated authority to you. It does a two-hop lookup. Internet goes to them, and they say go to you. Either way works, but both cases, you talk to your provider, and he points to you. The last ones that you might, if you want to get yourself listed in the .us domain, you would get US domain template text. We don't need to fetch all of those. I think you've got enough here. The trick's to understand this is where it is, in rs.internic.net FTP sites where all the forms are. Now let's get out of here and let's edit that form where... And domain-t is what was left of the name domain template in here when it came in. And you'll see that this is the template. These are all the fields you fill in. And go down to the end of this, and this is much better than when I taught this class a year ago, because they've put readable and usable instructions in here now. It used to be, here's the form. If you don't know what to do with it, you're never going to find out if somebody doesn't tell you. They now have instructions. They tell you what to do. Organization to use it. Page down again. Oh, page up, I guess it was. This is how to delete one, how to update one. They tell you how to do everything.
Be sure you use this form and not the old.
Yes, you have to use the current form. I would say every so often go check to see that you've got the new form, because they do revise it every so often. However, it's not too bad. If you send in the old form, you'll get about 2 to 3 hours later a message from domreg@internic.net saying, please use the new form, and then we'll talk to you.
Well, he sent it back saying you didn't fill out the form correctly.
Well, mine actually not too long ago said you need to use the new form.
Oh.